You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, May 19th, 2010. This is episode 132, Sprigs Squared. It's time again for another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast. My name is Martin Spriggs, and we're coming to you on Wednesday, May 19th of 2010. We're up to episode 132, Sally.
That's right. May is flying by, almost time for summer. And this morning, I'm fortunate to be joined not by just one Spriggs fellow, but by two. Spriggs Squared this morning.
Joining us today is my son, Aaron. We have, hi, Aaron. How are you?
I'm good.
And you're coming to us from where?
I'm coming to you from the Point of Grace, the Milwaukee Campus Ministries Church on the east side by UWM.
Okay, which is where you are a student, correct?
Correct.
And what year are you there? Tell us what you're studying.
I'm a junior currently studying graphic design, so I'm getting a little bit more in-depth into logo design and company branding right now, hopefully into something like web design in the future, too.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And probably not on the four-year plan, are you?
Well, that's what happens when you switch majors twice,
right.
So...
That's okay. We want you to find where you need to be. So, and we decided to ask Aaron on because we're focusing a show on Macs, and those people that have listened to the show in the past have probably heard me say on a number of occasions that Aaron is an employee of Apple. Therefore, we thought, hey, what better person to get on the show than somebody who deals with Macs day in and day out, deals with customers looking for Mac products. And obviously, our focus is Mac in ministry. And also, we have an interview later on with Pastor Steve Bauer, who is a Mac devotee, and he talks about a couple of Mac-only pieces of software that help him in his ministry. So maybe, Aaron, you can give us a little bit of a feel for what it's like to work in the Apple Store. Now, you work in the Mayfair Apple Store, right?
Yep.
What do you do there?
I am, my official title is Specialist, so pretty much exactly what you said. I help people find the Apple product they're looking for, as if it's anything from an iPhone or an iPad or an iPod or a Mac itself. Really cover the whole range and also some small technical support too. So kind of the whole nine yards.
Mm-hmm. And I get the sense, and Sally, I think you would agree with this too, that we hear a lot of growing Mac buzz about different products. Obviously, the iPad and the iPhone have been huge, huge in the news. But I think in general, the feeling that Apple products are cool and that they're desirable is probably something you're seeing too, Aaron. Is the store is pretty busy?
Yeah, you could say that. It's pretty much no matter what day it is, I see a constant flow of traffic in, even on weekdays. Mm-hmm. We're still the busiest store in the mall. It's a crazy job, but it's a lot of fun. I get to talk to a lot of interesting people.
I bet. So what's the appeal of the Mac in your mind? Why is it gaining so much popularity?
Well, I hear a bunch of different reasons why people come in. My particular reasons behind it, design is a big thing. It looks really good as far as the thinness, the durability of them, battery life. General ease of use of the operating system. You don't have to know a lot coming into it. I see people coming in 70, 80 years old. It's the first time they've ever bought a computer, and they're looking at the Mac, and they get right into it with getting their hands dirty. A couple other reasons, security. They're kind of notoriously known, for virus protection or security, and they generally don't need it because it's built into the system itself. They're pretty long lasting too. I mean, I've had this Mac that I'm using right now for just over 3 years. It actually just ran out of AppleCare. Mm-hmm. And I haven't really had any major problems with it at all. Or if there was a problem, I was able to figure it out on my own. Even if you're coming from Windows too, switching to a Mac is really easy, mainly based on they can run Windows if you actually need it to. So just a bunch of reasons why I see people looking at them. Mm-hmm.
I got a kick out of our recent visit to the Apple Store. We frequent the one in the Mall of America here, which is a huge store. Mm-hmm. And, I walk in and I have three boys, and there we are all in a line attached to the iPads, checking out all the apps, figuring everything out. They all are iPod Touch boys, so they like to look at all the apps that are demoed on the machines there in the store and figure out what they like and what they don't like. But, I guess the one comment that I would make is just how dead easy it is to mm-hmm. use. The graphics are just stunning and very, very intuitive. So, I mean, what's not to like, Aaron? Is there anything that is on the downside of these Mac offerings?
I struggled with this question when it was sent to me. It's like, well, what do I really not like? And not just like as an Apple employee just looking at this, but I mean, it's...
I don't want you to get you fired, by the way. So
anything
that Steve Jobs is going to listen to and then say, right, hey, right. That Aaron Spriggs character, he doesn't like this part about the Mac. He's history.
Yeah. I mean, there's really only a couple of things that I could think of. Coming from a PC to a Mac, I was very nerd-oriented and getting my file structure exactly how I wanted it. And some of the Mac programs don't handle it like you're used to on a PC. For instance... iPhoto is a really good example where you just dump all of your photos into iPhoto and you let it take care of it. But you can't see the file structure of iPhoto, and you can't specifically go into a folder and pull a photo out. You have to open up iPhoto and drag a photo out if you want it. That's one of the only things that bother me. Other than that, networking from PCs to Macs. Not from Macs to PCs, that's easy. But actually, like, finding a Mac on a network, I've just had problems with that in the past. I don't know why. I honestly haven't looked that much into it. Mm-hmm. But going from a Mac to a PC, I found is a lot easier.
Sure. One negative that I see, which it depends on your perspective, I suppose, is the cost. I mean, you are paying a premium for Mac products. And, you know, it's debatable, you know, whether you're getting your money's worth out of them. And I know that, you know, we're not going to solve that debate here. But, again, you're probably paying a little bit more to use a Mac product, right?
In some cases, yeah. I mean, it really depends on what you're looking for. I mean, mm-hmm. when I compare it to, like, people looking at PCs, I'll actually, like, go with people to, like, Dell or HP's website and spec out a PC that would be a very similar speed to a Mac. Uh-huh. They usually come out around the same price. I mean, when you add in like the software of the iLife suite for editing photos and movies and audio, and on top of that, not really having to pay for virus protection, I found it comes out pretty even. I mean, there probably is a little bit of difference in price, but I find it's generally negligible if you're looking for a really nice machine.
Uh-huh. Do you find a lot of Windows people coming in and saying, I want to switch, or why should I switch? Or they have pretty much made up their mind?
I would say it's about half and half. I mean, I'd probably say at least 50% of the people I talk to are switching from PCs. It's a pretty high number. A lot of people like sayings of, I'm just really sick of this PC. I'm just like, okay. Cool. Let's take a look at this MacBook.
Makes your job easier, right?
You're right. They sell themselves. It's a pretty easy job for me.
Do you see a lot of the same people coming in week after week, just kind of seeing what's out there and playing around with stuff?
I see a lot of people week after week to go on the internet in our store. There's a couple of people that I've become on a first-name basis with. I won't mention any names now, but over the past almost 2 years that I've worked there, I've seen this same lady three times, and I've sold her a computer each time. It just so happened that we worked with each other each time, and she's very nice person to work with, and just people like that coming in for support, just to ask questions, just because it feels like a really welcome environment, and we generally know what we're talking about. We're getting paid to know what we're talking about. So,
mm-hmm. Any angry customers?
Yeah. when somebody comes in and their iPhone screen is shattered, they're not generally too happy that we tell them it's going to be a cost for replacement because they broke their own phone.
Right. Covered under AppleCare.
Yeah, AppleCare covers a lot of things, but it's not going to cover it if you run it over with your car or right. drop it out of a boat or anything like that. So that's what homeowners insurance is for.
Okay.
So what about this whole iPhone, iPod Touch, and now iPad market? It just really exploded. And obviously, you're probably seeing a lot of different customers with a lot of different needs that are being met by this new trend in Mac offerings.
I mean, it's really kind of amazing to see the range of people coming in to look at this. I mean, anything from a teenager just to look at it, to play games on it, to I wouldn't say older because I might offend some people, but people looking into
like
using
me,
it. Possibly. I mean, I won't name names, but looking into business purposes for it. So I've seen people come in really interested in the word processing and how that works and how you can send that out to people.
The iPad?
Yeah, the iPad specifically. But even like for the iPhone and iPod Touch market too, I see a lot of people using it for business. iPhones in particular, I'm actually really surprised to see the uptick in how many business people are using the iPhone. Mainly probably because it's based on some of that exchange support is built in now. So you can have your contacts and calendars sync back and forth as well as your mail and all of the different applications. I mean, your own business could develop an application for your company to use and distribute it. So it's extremely wide range that I see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you hit on just one of the core functions there, that whole contact list and calendar in your pocket and constantly up to date. Remember, Martin, we talked to Pastor Calway 2 years ago, probably, mm-hmm. right when the iPhone came out, and that's exactly what he said as a pastor, you know, to have that contact list in his pocket was just a powerful thing. And it's just really right. exciting to see the technology develop.
Well, I think one thing that Apple has done really well is kind of create this ecosystem around their applications where even if the device is, you know, maybe surpassed by something else, it's very hard to equal what you can put on the handset or the tablet or whatever it is. So they've got built-in advantage with just large amounts of functionality that you can download many times for free or for very low cost. That was probably something that maybe they didn't even know what they were getting into when they started it, right, Aaron?
Mm-hmm. So most definitely.
And you have how many apps do you have on your iPhone, Aaron?
Oh, I'm going to embarrass myself here.
How many screens maybe is an easier one?
Let's see. I'm looking at it right now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 12 pages. Not all of them are filled, so maybe like 10 and a half.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know you can only use one app at one time on the iPhone.
Yeah, I know. That's changing.
That's not true.
That's changing.
That's right.
Well, it's almost not true. That's right. That's right. All right. Very good. Let's move on. Now, focusing specifically on Bible software, we had a chance to talk with Steve Bauer from West Newton, Pennsylvania. He uses a couple products that are Mac exclusive, and he was willing to share his experiences with those. And for you Mac users out there, especially, something that you may want to check out as well. So let's listen to our conversation with Steve Bauer. Joining us today on the Wells Tech Podcast, we're pleased to have Pastor Steve Bauer from West Newton, Pennsylvania at Faith Lutheran there. Welcome, Steve.
Hello.
So good to have you. I wanted to talk to you about some Bible study software that you are that you are using that I had never heard of. But before we get to that, maybe if you could tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're serving, where maybe if you've served other places in the past, what things are like there in West Newton.
Yeah, my first call out of the seminary in 2003 was to St. Peter in Fort Collins, Colorado. Served there as an associate pastor for a little less than 4 years, and now I'm out here in southwest Pennsylvania, about an hour south of Pittsburgh, on the very sort of southwest corner of Pennsylvania. As far as what it's like, it's a small congregation, smaller at least, about 100 members, and it's more of a rural area. It's a wonderful place to serve and a wonderful place to raise our kids as well. It's quite a wonderful call and a situation to be in.
Had you known anything about the area before you moved to Pennsylvania? We don't have too many Wells churches there, I would assume.
No, we have four Wells churches, and they're kind of on the outskirts of the state. No, I didn't know much of anything. I grew up in Montana, and I was very much I love the mountains and such, and it was nice to be in Fort Collins on the foot of the Rockies. And then we're driving out east. I'd only been to Pennsylvania once before, and we kind of drove straight past the western part to get to where Karen, my wife's parents are over on the other side of the state. And so I'm driving through Indiana and Ohio, and it gets flatter and flatter and flatter, and I'm thinking to myself, well, where I'm hoping, I'm praying that there's some sort of elevation change or something. And thankfully, then you get into Pennsylvania, and you get these beautiful rolling hills in this area. And so I know I hadn't been out to Pennsylvania whatsoever, and it was just kind of interesting, ironic that our Karen's parents retired out to Pennsylvania a couple years before we got the call here.
Well, that worked out well.
Yeah, we came across your site, Pastor Bauer. It's stevebauer.us, a WordPress blog, and know that you are an Accordance user and maybe kind of the go-to guy for Wells. I think you've got some worship office connections as well with the Wells, and so we wanted to learn more about the Accordance software and how you use it, and maybe who it's for. Is it Mac only? Is there any parallel PC software, that kind of thing?
Sure, I'll start with your second question first. It's designed for the Mac. They do have an emulator that runs another PC, what, Basilisk or something like that. Never used it, never tried it. They say it works okay in that format, but it's very much Mac native, and it's not cross-platform, at least at this time, and probably not for some years in the future. Maybe the best way of leading into why you would buy a product like this is to maybe sort of tell a story. I went to an Accordance workshop over at Princeton, and there were about maybe 24 people in the class, and give or take about four knew Hebrew, and then the other 20 knew Koine Greek. And so we're answering these questions and asking these questions of the presenter, and about how does Accordance deal with this linguistic thingy or that thingy. And then all of a sudden I realized that I was asking the Greek questions, and I was the only one also asking questions for Hebrew. And it was kind of a strange thing to realize that I was the only one who, in the class, who knew both Greek and Hebrew. And it was a very humbling reminder that our church body is pretty rare, in that it has both the biblical languages that it teaches in its seminaries and MLC as well. And it's something to be very, very thankful for. And it was what led me into Accordance was after a series of crashes and Trojan horses and viruses and a whole bunch of stuff on the PC side, I basically threw the towel in and said, all right, enough is enough. And so I started looking for other stuff that was out there. And right about, that was right about my vicar year, and just through doing some searching, I came across Accordance. And Accordance is really original language centered for biblical languages, and they really, really, really stress exegesis. And so you know, the first step was to take all of, in technology, was to take all of those grammars and lexicons and all of those stuff and take them from print and put them in a digital format, so that when you're doing like a text, you know, you don't have like half a dozen or a dozen books all scattered throughout your desk like it used to be when we were doing our translation of Xenophon or Odyssey or whatever. And then the next step is to make it so that it was usable. You could, you know, say double click on a word in the Greek and it would pull up automatically something in the BDAG lexicon. And probably then the third step is to be able to get at the data that's in the lexicon in a number of different ways. And that's where I think Accordance really, really, really excels, is that it's you can really search for stuff, you can find it. Maybe I could summarize it with two P words, both the power and the prettiness. it's very, very powerful. I mean, you can search for a lot of stuff, and there's a lot of stuff with linguistics that are available for it. And the other thing is it's pretty. For example, the Hebrew font has both the, now again, unless you've taken Hebrew or something, this might very well go over your head, but it has the both the original accent, the breathing marks and all of that, and also has the Psalms conjunctive and disjunctive accents, all of that together there. All of that stuff you see above and below the Hebrew letters, it has all of that that you would see in the Hebrew Bible. And it does so with some beautiful font renderings. Yeah,
I can just imagine our pastor types in the audience getting really excited right now. Their hearts are probably beating fast. Good stuff.
Yeah,
huh?
Steve,
yeah,
how does that compare? Really, I assume you've looked at Logos before, and our resident ex-a-tweet, Aaron Fry, is a big Logos fan, and we've had him on the show a number of times. How does Accordance compare to that, if you're familiar with that at all?
Yeah, I'm kind of telling you my story with Accordance. Back when I had a PC, now this goes back about 10 years ago, so it would not surprise me at all if many things had changed since then, and there have been a number of good updates. But in order to figure out, you know, the parsing of a Greek or a Hebrew word, you'd have to open up two or three or four separate windows, and it became a very tedious process to figure out, you know, what to do an exegesis. And like I said, I'm sure they progressed. The difference between Accordance and Libronix, Logos, or whatever, from what I've been seeing, and again, I haven't used it for give or take about a decade, is one, quality versus quantity. With Logos, you're going to have a huge depth of different tools to make use of. Luther's works, the, you know, Concordia, the Confessions, all of those sorts of items.
Right.
And there's also, of course, the Greek and the Hebrew stuff. Whereas with Accordance, you know, there's some commentaries, but that's not really what they're looking at. That's not their primary emphasis. Their emphasis is the original languages. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you're looking at textual variants and trying to figure out what to do with that, I know, you know, the most up-to-date databases for that are with Accordance, but if you're looking for more general type stuff, then Logos and Libronix might be the way to go. Now, again, I might say this, and Aaron Fry might be listening, and he might come over and egg my house and say, hey, my dog or something, and he's welcome to correct me on that, you know, but from what I've been on seeing and what I've experienced, that holds to be true, at least from my experience.
So, in visiting your blog, you have a whole page dedicated to Accordance user tools and some things specific to our Wells planning of Christian worship and that kind of thing. Can you tell us about some of the tools that are there and how they are useful in your ministry?
Yeah. With Accordance, you can make your own user tools. And as long as there are texts that are not copyrighted, or you're at least given permission for that purpose, you know, you can make these user tools. And they're searchable by whatever, by scripture passages, by Greek or Hebrew or English text. And it may become a kind of a very useful tool. For example, there's the Planning Christian Worship stuff I have there. And it has all the stuff that, the PDF file has. But it's searchable. I mean, you can search it for stuff, and how I use it is how many times, for example, does Revelation 7 pop up in a given year when planning ahead? And let's say I preach on Revelation 7 now. Is it going to pop up, you know, 6 months from now? And that you can search it for those type of things. I also have C.F.W. Walther's Law and Gospel there, the uncopyrighted edition. And there again, there are some choice Greek phrases that I remember from reading that, but I don't remember where they are in the book, and I could spend, you know, days paging through the book to figure out where it is. But, you know, I can search for it very quickly and find it. You know, and so that's one unique feature, is you can make your own user tools. I don't have it posted there on the website, but I have all of our dogmatics notes from the seminary, with all of my notes added in there as well. And there again, that becomes a useful tool, because if I'm doing a text study or a conference paper or something like that, and I want to see how this section of scripture is used in Lutheran circles and in our dogmatics notes, I can search that, and it'll pull up all of those scripture references or language references. So that's kind of how I use it. I also use it, the Planning Christian Worship stuff, on a weekly basis, just with, you know, picking out hymns and texts and all of that for the sermons. So, yeah.
And so if people visited this page, these user tools are downloadable and they can add them into their Accordant software. Is that right?
Yeah. That's exactly it. You can add it in as tools that you put up on your window, on your desktop, and all of that for the Accordant stuff.
That's awesome.
And they're free and freely usable and all of that. Yeah.
So, Steve, what is the cost of Accordants?
Well, I mean, it's professional grade stuff, so it's not cheap. Let's put it that way. I think it's comparable to what's out there for Logos. I know that my first package that I started out with was $200, and that gets you the Greek and Hebrew and one lexicon of each. But every year, I probably spend too much. I don't know. I probably spend about $100 or $200 maybe a year, just sort of continuing to add on some resources. So I just added on some textual variant books, Metzger's book on textual variants and the Comfort series as well, which are, you know, again, that's for the textual variants. But like I said, I keep adding. I probably have, you know, embarrassingly probably over $2,000 that I spent in it. But you don't have to start out there. You can just sort of slowly stack on stuff and build from there.
Sure. Now, we also noticed on your blog that you highlight another tool that you speak highly of, and that's LaTeX. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how you use it?
Yeah. Two questions. What is it and how do I use it? With the first question, LaTeX, it's LaTeX, and, you know, I mean, this is geeks back in days of old, and they like to make geeky-sounding names. And what it is before there was Adobe InDesign or Quark Express or whatever, when you wanted to print a book, this is what they used. Or rather, to be more accurate, to typeset a book. And it's progressed a lot from then, but that's originally what it is. It's a markup language like, you know, HTML or XML or all of that good stuff. And so that's what it is. That's its background. Now, why would you use it? And there's really two reasons behind that. Going back to my vicar year, for example, I was very inefficient in how I would write my sermons. I'd write a sentence or maybe a paragraph, and I'd go back and I'd change the colors, and I'd make it bold or italic or underlined or all of that sort of stuff that I would make, instead of writing a two-hour set of time for a sermon. It'd take, like, you know, 12 hours to write a sermon because I was playing around with it. What this is meant to do is you take a normal, ugly plain text document, and you grind out your sermon, and then afterward you make it look pretty, and you set the type and all of that. And it's, for me, it's helped me really focus. It also helps with the logical flow and stuff. You're not being distracted all the time. You just sit down and you write it down, and then you worry about the pretty stuff later on. The other reason why I really like it is it's built with multilingual Unicode from the ground up. Unicode is for guys that deal with languages other than English, it's a golden word, because it's one font but has different characters depending on what language you're using, and they correspond to each other. And so what it does then, and I don't know if you've ever, for all the pastors out there, or anyone who deals with original languages or different languages other than English, you're going along just fine typing with a normal Latin alphabet. But what if you're doing like an umlaut in German? You know, back in the day, you had to like put, you know, two fingers from each hand and a foot on the keyboard just to get an umlaut on a U or something. With this, it really does a good job of you can input those characters very easily. Where it becomes even more interesting and nice is that the letters and the vowel, the letters and the accent points all stack up the way that they're supposed to. This becomes probably the best way to see this is in the Hebrew text. When you get all of these funky looking symbols, and they need to stack up in a certain way, otherwise they just look really, really ugly. And I've noticed in Word documents or Open Office documents, it just does not look the way it's supposed to look in the biblical text, for example, with the Hebrew. Whereas with LaTeX and the variant that I use for Mac, it stacks up the right way and it looks the right way. And so you're not going to be embarrassed at your pastor's conference and have to give the disclaimer, you know, I was doing this just fine. I don't know why it turned out this way. It's really ugly, and I apologize. You know, don't send me away. Those sorts of apologies.
Yeah, you're under enough stress already just doing the exegesis itself, right?
Oh, yeah. It's kind of like a big trial by fire when you give your first conference paper. I don't care what it is, whether it's a isagogical or exegetical or just a general paper. Yeah, it's tough as it is to then have these mistakes on top of it. Yeah.
So is LaTeX Mac only?
No. I mean, it was mostly, but before anything, it was more of a Unix thing, a Linux thing. And then it was very much ported over to both the PC and the Mac. On PC, probably the easiest way to get into it is this thing called Lix, I don't even know how to say it, but L-Y-X. And you type it in, and then it gives you an example of what it would look like if you were using LaTeX. The variant that I use is called Tetek, X-E-T-E-X. It's for Mac OS. And what it does is it makes use of the fonts that are installed on your Mac. It makes use of those and all of the stuff that goes with those fonts. And it makes it look nice and pretty. So that's the variant that I use, and of course, they probably have stuff out there for. I know they have stuff out there for Linux because I've seen it with, how do you say it, Ubuntu.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
I've seen it with that, but I don't know what's out there in the PC world. I'm in shallow water if you ask me for stuff in the PC world because I haven't been too acquainted with that for a while.
He's a true Mac man, and a great show for you to be a part of because we're talking Macs and ministry for the whole show. Before we leave you, we wondered if you have any other Mac goodies to share with us that are helpful in your ministry.
Maybe I'll share two. One is Mac and one is just general. For the Mac stuff, I end up using this program called Omni Outliner a lot for both Bible studies and sermons and council meetings because I was never too organized. There's always room to grow in a logical progression of thought. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. When it came to my sermons, there was always a weakness, and it's an outlining program, and it does a beautiful job of that. I mean, it stacks up an outline for you, and you work through it. I use that every single week as I move from text study to sermon. And there are some times where, rarely, if I'm not able to write out my sermon, I go from text study to an outline with Omni Outliner, and then I just preach from that. That would be my golden gem as far as Mac stuff, specifically Mac stuff that's out there. The other thing that I mentioned is I just stumbled on this a couple months ago. The Greek Font Society. It's GreekFontSociety.gr, you know, for Greece. They have a whole bunch of free and really beautiful typesets for some of them are just Greek and others are a transition between the Latin, you know, English alphabet and also to Greek. A whole lot of options there to look at that I just found. So if you're looking for a really nice looking set of fonts, you know, they're free, they're open fonts, then you can go in that direction. That's what I would recommend. So I wish there were more stuff out there for Hebrew, but at least for Greek, there's that.
That's awesome.
So before we let you go, Steve, since you are a Mac enthusiast, we have to ask the iPad question. Is that something you've looked at or have in your future?
No. I think that for me, the issue is when I buy a Mac, I usually, take out a loan and beg the wife, and there really isn't a whole lot of money left over. So in my brain, I'm sort of shutting off that part of my brain, because I'm sure if I saw an iPad,
good for you.
The other part of it too is I spend a whole lot more time inputting than
consuming, right?
Whatever,
right?
Yeah. And so unless I could plug in a keyboard to it or something,
you could do that.
Oh, you can. Okay,
get behind me, Satan.
Yeah, and the thing is I'm just newly trained. I can't figure out everything that goes on with my iPhone. I just got a iPhone. Was it 3GS? And boy, is that a wonderful thing! I used to manage about five or six different calendars on for the church, and you have to somehow juggle all of them. And this is really neat because if I put it in my iPhone, if I'm over in Altoona, 2 hours away for a meeting, it'll sync up with all the calendars and all the computers over the Google Cal, which is great because back in the day I had to try and set up my own WebDAV and CalDAV servers, which was next to impossible.
Yeah, a lot of fun, yeah, absolutely.
So the iPhone, I have a hard enough time trying to figure out everything that goes with the iPhone, let alone an iPad. Maybe someday if I get around it, I'll have more time to look at it. And like I said, I try to close off that part of my brain because last thing I want to do is start envying and lusting for things that I don't need right now. So yeah,
that's good. Very very monastic of you. Yes.
Well, yeah. That's my goal, to seclude myself from society. Anyway.
All right, Steve. Thanks so much for joining us. Also, thanks for the links on your blog to the Welsh Tech Podcast. We appreciate all those links and your listenership if you do listen at any level. But again, blessings on your work and thanks for sharing your stuff.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Steve, thanks so much for your time with us. Sally, it was interesting to hear a Mac enthusiast's perspective on how he uses it in ministry.
Absolutely, and we just really appreciate Pastor Bauer supplying us with some great links. Mm-hmm. I'd be kind of lost to link to Mac things because that is not my world for sure. But in addition to the things that he mentioned during our time with him, he sent us a follow-up email and sent us links to Accordance, which is available for Windows through an emulator, and some Accordance video tutorials, which he recommends and has heard good reviews of, and also the specific links to the Greek Font Society that he mentioned towards the end of the interview. So we'll have lots of links for you on our show notes page at wellstech.wells.net. So be sure to surf over there and check out these links provided by Pastor Bauer.
Very good. So lots of great ministry resources, especially on the Mac side, which is the focus and theme of today's show. Should we move on to news and tech? It's not Mac heavy, actually, as I look at it, but we don't make the news. We just report it, right?
That's right.
So one thing that is kind of the opposite side of the Mac world is that Office 2010 had a launch party this past week, and I've been trying out the Office 2010 suite, and I have to say that they've done some nice work with not huge upgrades in any one area, but I think they've kind of consolidated things, and they've added the ribbon to Outlook, and it looks. I think they've made things work a little bit better together. It seems very really stable, and especially if you're on 2003, probably worth a look at 2010. And if you are a nonprofit, which most of our listeners are, whether you're a church or a school, make sure you get in on charity or nonprofit or educational pricing, because Microsoft does a nice job at discounting that for nonprofits. So Office 2010 is out.
And Martin, I think probably worth a mention with that is just the additional stability and investment that Microsoft is making to the online
right,
version,
the cloud-based apps. Exactly. We talked a little bit about that last week when we were talking about Docs.com and the Facebook integration. But I think Microsoft is kind of seeing the light here that cloud-based solutions like Google Docs is something to be reckoned with, and they're beginning to craft their own solution. And I think, as I mentioned last week, it looks like there's more functionality within the Microsoft suite, which you maybe would expect, and they're offering it on different platforms. So if you've got a Live account or SkyDrive account, we've talked about that in the past, you can get Docs there, and also via this Photoshop Docs.com thing, or Photoshop, Facebook.
Facebook, there you go.
As I said, Photoshop, because there's Photoshop news, right, Sally?
That's right. We have a few software updates to mention today, and one of them is a new version of Photoshop has been released, CS5, I believe.
Yeah, Aaron, do you have that yet, or have you seen that?
I have downloaded the trial of at least Photoshop, and that is a pretty slick application.
Sweet, isn't it? Some of the imaging tools that you've got with the essentially you can strip out unneeded, telephone poles or images in the foreground, and it magically kind of fills in the background, looks at the entire picture, and kind of fills in the gaps all by itself. If that works on a consistent basis, boy, that's magic.
Yeah, I've tried it on a bunch of different photos, and it works better in some places than others.
Right.
But it definitely makes my degree that I'm going for worth a lot less money.
That's right, where you can get those same tools in the hands of hacks like me, and that haven't gone to school for this stuff. So, well, you'll have to find another niche. So, but it also makes your job a little bit easier too, I would think.
That's true.
So.
And another upgrade worth mentioning is from my favorite company, TechSmith. Snagit has a new version. Snagit 10 was released last week. And one of the most powerful things, Snagit is a screen capture utility and also has a back-end image editor, which is fairly powerful on its own right, not a Photoshop level at all, but you can do quite a bit of image editing in the Snagit editor as well. One of the interesting things that Snagit can do is capture different takes on your screen. So you can carve out just a small portion of the screen, you can capture an entire window, or even a scrolling window of a web page that's outside the view of the visible screen. So it'll scroll down and capture the entire web page. And that used to be different functions within Snagit. You had to tell it in advance which of those you wanted to do a little bit or the whole scrolling window or whatever. And now they've combined that so that when you make your screen capture, you can actually make that decision on the fly. Makes it a lot easier and a lot quicker to take screen captures and get exactly what you want into the Snagit software. So maybe worth downloading a free trial of Snagit 10. They have a 30-day free trial available, and we'll have a link in the show notes to that.
So since this is Mac Day, I should ask, is there a Mac version for Snagit?
I believe there is. I'd have to triple-check, but I think they did come out with a Mac version fairly recently.
Okay. Aaron, you use some screen capture stuff, don't you? What do you use on the Mac?
Yeah, actually anybody who has a Mac and the most recent version of the operating system can do it just with QuickTime. That's something they integrated into QuickTime 10 when that came out. But I've been using a program for a while called Snaps Pro 10. It's by Ambrosia Software, but it does a number of different things as far as screen captures or just audio or actual video screen captures, or if you just want snapshots of windows or whatever like that. It's a really powerful tool.
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of these come on the market now, so I think people are realizing the power of being able to grab screenshots for demonstration, for support, for learning, e-learning, those kinds of things. So,
and I do see that Snagit has a Mac beta version.
Okay.
So they're
just getting into it. Okay, good deal, good company. All right, let's move on to our picks of the week. Aaron, you are a guest today, so maybe did you come loaded with a pick today?
I did. I looked at a bunch of different applications I use all the time, as far as like Dropbox, which you use, has been mentioned on the show before, MobileMe, but I thought that was kind of an expensive pick.
Yeah, they just upgraded, I think, portions of MobileMe, didn't they?
Yeah,
the email client, right?
Yeah, it has a beta now. Mm-hmm. I also use BusyCal a lot, which is kind of an iCal supplement. But I finally decided on a Mac-specific application called Things. Simple name. It's made by the folks at Cultured Code.
It's spell it? T-H-I-N-G-S?
Things, just like the word.
Yep. Okay.
If you're looking at their website, you can see they've won quite a bit of awards recently, at least. They won an award, a Best of Design award at WWDC and Macworld, both of which are very big Mac conferences.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very powerful to-do list, pretty much, is what it is. Sounds really simple, but you can integrate it into a lot of other things that you use all the time, even down to the point of if you know scripting and you want to integrate it into an automatic script that you run on your computer, you can do that. They have an iPhone and an iPad app as well that sync with it wirelessly to your computer, so you can have all of your to-dos on the go with you. You think of something, you just put it in your iPhone or your iPod Touch, and when you get home, sync it up with your computer and be ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
I use it daily as my organization tool, along with iCal. And not only just side-by-side with the program, but it will actually sync with the iCal as well. So you can have all of your to-dos that have dates listed on them, uh-huh, as far as finishing dates. It will actually pop up in your iCal or give you a notification.
Oh, cool. Cool. Cost?
It's not super cheap. You can generally find some discount codes online. The desktop client itself is actually $50. But I found, as far as to-do lists go or anything like that, like Evernote's a free option, but this gives you a lot more capabilities as far as tagging with different applications, and it really integrates itself into the Mac a lot.
Okay, so it leverages the Mac experience, yeah.
Yeah, it also, the iPhone client and the iPad client are separate. The iPhone client is 10 and the iPad client is 20. I foresee those kind of dropping in the future, and they have sales every once in a while. I found that I haven't really found a better solution for getting my life organized and using everything from Evernote to just the Notes app on the iPhone. This is the best solution I've found so far.
Okay. Get you to those finals on time.
Exactly.
Which you have later today, right? Do you have a final today?
Yeah, I've got one in roughly 45 minutes here,
okay,
but
well,
I'm completely ready for that.
So squeezing us in there.
Yeah.
You hit on something, Aaron, that I think is interesting. I was actually kind of surprised to see that iPad apps are quite a bit more expensive than iPod apps. It seems like it's pretty much the same thing, just bigger. So I wasn't expecting that with the price differential.
Yeah, some of them have a little bit more functionality. As far as the iPad client goes, I found that I like that better than the Mac desktop client, actually. I think the interface is a little bit easier to use, a little bit more intuitive. But it is something I've been seeing, that iPad apps are generally running from anywhere from like $5 to $20, $25. So that was kind of the same thing when the original App Store for the iPhone was launched. Apps were pretty expensive, but that came down in price after a while. I kind of foresee the same thing happening with iPad apps. So right now it's all premium users, the first comers.
You can put that on your list of reasons why your mother and I should get you an iPad for your birthday, right?
Exactly.
We've been tracking your progress and rallying for one of them.
That's right.
Thank you.
It's the car versus the iPad, yes.
Yeah.
It's a hard choice, honestly.
Yes. All right, Sally, what's your pick?
I just wanted to share a couple of infographics that I came across on the web this week.
I love
week.
Those. Those are awesome.
Yeah, really telling information-loaded images, basically, that people put together. And one that I thought was really impressive is called A Day in the Internet, and it kind of shows you what happens on an average day in the Internet. Some really impressive statistics: over 210 billion emails, 3 million images added to Flickr every day. That's enough to fill a 375,000 page photo album. So just a little small photo album for you each day on Flickr. It says that 43 million gig is sent across mobile phones globally every day.
That's amazing.
That's equivalent to 1.7 million Blu-ray discs or 63.9 trillion 3.5-inch diskettes. If you remember those.
Aaron, do you know what those are?
Yeah.
I actually do. Thank you very much.
So, other interesting statistics, Facebook is getting 700,000 new members every day, and there are 45 million status updates every day on Facebook versus 5 million on Twitter. So, wow, Facebook is 9 times more status updates than Twitter. I was kind of surprised by that. And the last one in this infographic says that bloggers post 900,000 new articles every day. That's enough to post enough posts to fill the New York Times for 19 years. So
amazing stuff.
Pretty amazing statistics, and you know, maybe just from a ministry perspective, more fuel for the fire that we do need to be part of this online conversation, because obviously the world is online, and we can reach out with a great message there. I'll include a link to a second infographic that has to do with internet speeds and cost around the world, which I found interesting as well. And Japan's internet speed is, I don't know,
light years beyond us.
Yeah, something like more than almost 20 times faster than our average internet
61,
speed.
61 megs per second.
Yep.
Megabits per second.
Yeah, so check out those two infographics, and perhaps there's something of interest to you there.
Very good. I love those. And I found great use for those in some of the presentations I do as well. My pick, and I had a struggle this week as well. I jumped around in three different areas, and two of them I'm using a lot, and one I've used a lot for a long time, and that's my pick, because I wanted to stay kind of Mac-centric, Mac-focused, and that is an iPhone app called YouVersion. I think there's probably an Android app and BlackBerry and all the others as well. YouVersion is basically an app that brings the Bible to your handset, to your smartphone. And obviously you have to be online. I don't think there's a downloadable, at least for the NIV, I don't think you can download the NIV. So you do have to have an internet connection or 3G connection. It'll work on Edge too, I suppose, but really easy to use. Just do a search for a Bible verse. You can go back and forth between chapters, between books, between translations. You can search for words. You can search for Bible passages. One thing I really like is their reading plan section, where you have all kinds of options about how you'd like to maybe read the Bible. This is great for commuters, especially where you're sitting. Especially those of you that commute into, like I did into Chicago, where you're not driving. So you've got just time to kill. And instead of reading the paper here, you've got your smartphone and you got your Bible right there and a reading plan where you can go through the entire Bible in a year. You can do the Bible in 90 days. You can do the Old Testament or New Testament in 30 days, the Psalms, all kinds of reading plans that they have on here. And you just click start, and if you miss a day, it just picks up where you left off, and you can catch up if you like. But all kinds of cool stuff that they put on this, and you can add bookmarks and all kinds of different things for this app, YouVersion, and it's free. So we had a whole show on Bible reading apps, and I think we brought this up at this point, but I don't think I made it a pick. So go out and check it. If you've got a smartphone, I'm sure it's out there somewhere available for your brand.
My boys use YouVersion to study their memory work on Mark.
Online?
Yeah.
On the computer, yeah.
On their iPod Touch.
Okay, yep, cool.
And they bookmark their passages, and then they can just hand me their iPod when they're ready to
cool.
say them.
Love it.
So, I love it.
Okay. All right. We want to make everybody aware of some live web streaming we have coming up. This is the week that Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary has many, many events that some of our listeners might be interested in following. It starts, if you're if you are listening shortly after we release this, you'll be in time to catch the concert, which is next I want to say this Thursday night, right, at 7 o'clock.
Right. They should be able to hear the call service as well on Thursday morning, because this show will be released
that's
on
right,
Wednesday.
That's right. That's right. Those are on the same day, exactly. So Thursday morning, 10 o'clock Central, Thursday night for pastor calls, graduation or commencement concert that evening at 7 o'clock. I'll be doing the streaming for that. And then the next day, 10 in the morning on Friday, is graduation. Web address for that, Sally, is?
I believe it's streams.wells.net.
Correct. And just click on Streams Media and go to Live. I believe it's streams.wells.net/live.
Yeah, we'll have the link in our show notes for sure.
Very good. And we also wanted to give a plug for our final web training once again.
That's right. Coming up July 19th will be Final Web for Teachers, and then July 20th through 22nd, Final Web for Dummies. And it's really geared toward the all-encompassing kind of webmaster view of the site. Covers all the different widgets and gadgets that you can include in your final website. So links in the show notes to those registrations. Price is $49 a day or $129 for all 3 days of the Dummies class. So we'd love to have you join us in either New Ulm, Minnesota at Martin Luther College, or in Milwaukee, Wisconsin at the Senate Administration Building.
And both are nice places to be in July.
Yep.
I think, at least. I love the warm weather. Community feedback. There was an item we kind of skipped over in our conversation with you, Aaron, about we were talking last week about web design.
Right.
And you tweeted about a product called Squarespace. What's Squarespace?
Squarespace is a web design tool, but it's all online hosted. So you don't have to have a super fast computer to run it. But then a really nice thing about it is you don't need to know a lick of coding to be able to create.
Sounds good already.
To be able to create a really good looking, well functioning website. They've got a lot of different widgets you can plug in. You can get in dirty with the CSS and Java and HTML if you want to. But it's all WYSIWYG editing. What you see is what you get. You can drag and drop something over, and it will look like that when you post it to the web. Unlike in a program like Dreamweaver, it looks great now, and you post it to the web, and you wonder what happened. Sometimes.
But this is real simple to set up and real visual.
Yeah, it's a pretty cheap solution, too. They provide all of the hosting. It is a monthly subscription thing, so their plans start as cheap as $8 a month if you can find discount codes to make those cheaper for the lifetime of your order, too. You just do a quick Google search online. I'm actually using it to host the Point of Grace's website, tpog.net, right now. Right now, it's a pretty basic site. It'll get progressively more advanced as we go on here, but I was able to convert their entire website over from what they had before in about a day and a half, 2 days. And that was every single page on the site, and to be able to add stuff like Twitter streams and links to YouTube videos and all of that. It was really, really simple to set up.
Very good. Thanks. Appreciate that. Sally, who else is talking to us?
Well, another follow-up about web design. We talked last week with Perry Lund from Grace in Oskaloosa, Iowa. Love to say that Oskaloosa, Iowa place. And Perry sent us a follow-up email just with some links to different Joomla tools that he's used. So a plug-in for MP3 audio playback and a plug-in for photo gallery and things like that. So if you visited the Grace website and were wondering about some of the different add-ons that maybe were part of that site, we will have links in the show notes to those different things that Perry supplied for us. And in addition, Perry sent us an email about SME Storage, which is a multi-cloud data access provider. So he is using it as a Mac storage solution in the cloud. And I guess maybe kind of comparable to Windows SkyDrive and other storage solutions that we've talked about on the show. What he likes about it is it shares file links via RSS, Twitter, WordPress. It it definitely goes across different platforms as well. So if you're looking for a solution, particularly if you're a Mac person, you may want to check out SME Storage. And we thank Perry for that link.
Yep.
Then we had some links shared in the Wells Tech group on Digo, first from Jason Schmidt, who's at Gethsemane in Omaha, Nebraska. He shared a link to a Scrib book, a book that was available on the Scrib website called Web 2.0 Tools for Teachers. And there were some new things in this that I thought were worth checking out. And just... you know, having that Scribd experience, Martin, I think we've talked about that in the past, that you can publish things to Scrib and they're available for viewing online kind of in a book format, mm-hmm. or for download, printing, PDF, that kind of thing. So a really cool platform for sharing your work. And I just was curious if any of our Wells Tech listeners were using Scrib to publish and share things online. He also published a link to integrating SMS polling using Keynote with a site called Poll Everywhere, and a link to something called Virtual Manipulatives, easy for me to say, but I really got excited about this site because it basically is kind of an interactive site where you can do things similar to the SmartBoard notebook software feel. You can drag things onto the screen, you can work with them even without a SmartBoard, you know, with a computer hooked up to a projection system. So teachers in particular may be interested in the items available at this site as well. And then Martin, you had a link that you posted on Digo to a new image editor that you discovered.
Right. And I can't vouch for this because I've only played with it a little bit, but it looks, we're seeing more and more of these kinds of online image editors, and I played around with a number of them looking for kind of the right product set that would do the most for especially people manipulating images and creating images for websites. And one that I came across via my Google Reader was something called Thumba, thumba.net. It's Silverlight based. In fact, when you go there, you'll likely have to upgrade your Silverlight to the latest version. But they've got a nice user interface. I would say it's not as feature rich as Aviary. We've talked about that in the past. Maybe not even quite as simple to use as Picnic. But I think they do a better job in some areas, especially with like text and those kinds of things. So I think they all have their pluses and minuses. So you just have to kind of try them out. This is free to try, so there's not going to be any cost, you know, to actually experiment with it. But I thought I'd just raise awareness of it. Thumba.net is the URL.
All right, and last up, we had a comment on our Facebook page from our friend Gail Potratz, who is at Emmanuel in New London, Wisconsin, and Gail suggested that we would take a road trip, Martin, this summer. We're going to be doing a road trip series to someone using Google Apps. Mm-hmm. Martin, you had mentioned that you use Google Apps.
Yep.
And have integrated it with your website there at Peace in Hartford, your home congregation.
Right.
And Gail wondered if we could go to Peace on our road trip or maybe somewhere else that can give a little more hands-on how-to to use Google Apps.
Yep.
On a church or school website.
We will find some location, whether it be ours, or I know that there's an Area Lutheran High School that just recently went to Google Apps. I think that's going to be an easy find for us and probably very interesting to a lot of congregations and schools at this point.
So great idea, Gail. Mm-hmm. And if there are others who are listening who have ideas or who are doing something exciting with technology in their congregations or schools, please consider being part of our road trip series. We're trying to line up all those interviews right now, and we'd love to include you.
Aaron, are you a Google Apps user?
Only for some instances. I use Gmail a lot. I've been using it for, oh, I don't even want to know how many years
right
now. But as far as, like, yeah, since Google Documents or anything or anything like that. I'm not really super into it, but I definitely know of them and know how to use them. So they are great tools, especially since most of them are free.
Right. All right. Coming up next week, we will be joined by Gail Potratz, and she has interviewed one of her coworkers about her classroom website. I think that's a growing trend in our schools, that each classroom has its own page for assignment sharing, for resource sharing, all kinds of uses for a classroom page. So we'll hear Gail interview a coworker of hers from Emmanuel in New London. And we'll be talking about classroom websites in general next week. So especially if you are a teacher, this would be a show that you will not want to miss.
Summertime's a great time to update your classroom website, kind of revamp it, get it ready for the new school year. So maybe we'll have a few ideas for you.
Absolutely. I know we will. That's our job. All right. Aaron, thanks so much for joining us. I hope you are ready for physics in half hour here. Good to hear. That was a requirement before you came on the show, that you'd be ready for your physics exam. So blessings on that work. And one more after this?
One more art critique. This is my last actual final, but I have my design critique tomorrow night. That's it.
Blessings on that, too. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate your insights.
Thank you.
Let's close the show with the music of Dawn Galhar, Amazing Grace, from her album Inspirations. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.